Are you in a constant fight with your technology? And does it seem like the technology is winning? Well, you've come to the right place. It's time for Battleborn Tech with your host, Christy.
Even though Skynet tunes in just to root for the robots, this is Battleborn Tech every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Pacific, where we fight for the user on KNVC FM 95.1 and KNVC.org. Our on-air tech therapy is available by calling 775-241-3571 anytime. That's 775-241-3571. Leave your presenting tech issues, and our tech counselors will contact you for some tech treatment on Battleborn Tech. Remember, you are not alone against the tech. Battleborn Tech has opinions from Christy, Joe, and our callers. They are not the opinions of Computer Corps or KNVC. If you want their opinions on our opinions, you'll have to ask them yourself. Our last name is Tech, on air and on the web. Trace our ancestry at battleborn.tech. That's battleborn.tech on your favorite web browsers. www, optional.
Well, Christy, we've got two phone calls today, which is good because it gives us a little bit of elbow room to discuss what we think is important. It may not be what you think is important, but it'll tickle our fancy.
And Joe, the way to fix that, to talk about what's important to you, is to call in. That's right. 775-241-3571.
And just keep in mind that all these calls are pre-recorded. So personal details and product information is handily edited out. So you can call with the full knowledge that our team of editors will take good care of you for your on-air appearance.
Which is a good thing, because you can call anytime.
Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
And remember, first names only.
And our first phone call of the day is going to be from Steve. He's got an Android phone. How can he deal with an Android phone and not have Google at the same time?
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, this is Steve.
Hey, Steve.
I had been on one of your first shows you did and gave some tips about installing Windows and how to...
How to shut up Windows broadcasting, things you may not want Microsoft to know. Yeah, it was great. Back when we had in-studio guests, wow, those were the days before times.
Yeah.
What's up, Steve? You got something good to share with our listeners this week?
Well, back then I gave a hint about how to avoid setting up a Microsoft account when you install Windows.
Sure.
Where you just set up a local account. And so I thought this hint about doing something similar with an Android phone might be helpful.
Oh, great. Yeah. Well, how do you get around going to the great Google with an Android phone if that's the way you roll? What do you do?
Yeah, my wife and I use iPhones, but my neighbor uses Android. He got a new phone for his wife, and she doesn't do a whole lot with it. She just wants it for making phone calls, so she doesn't need all the fancy apps and that sort of thing. So anyway, when we got the new phone and we were setting it up, and it got to the point of wanting a Google account. And you know, she didn't need that or want that. Didn't need all the extra fuss to do with that. So I tried several things. I Googled it, of course.
You didn't need the extra fuss. Well, that's a technical term. I like that. So you Google how not to Google. How'd that go?
Yeah. Well, I didn't find too much. Mostly they said to you just hit the continue button. Well, I didn't have that option on this. It was a newer version of Android. Well, not the latest. I think it's Android 10. It was a newer version than our old one. And so anyway, we kind of put it aside, and it would every time he would start it up, it would nag him for finishing the setup and wanting the Google account. So I tried the same trick as with Microsoft, where basically you disconnect the network connection on it. And in this case, specifically, instead of unplugging a network cable, or it gets to the point where it wants you to do a Wi-Fi connection, of course, with your phone. And I didn't disconnect the Wi-Fi per se, but I was not at his house where we'd initially set it up, and it was connected to his Wi-Fi. We were remote from that, so it was not connecting. And lo and behold, it let me go ahead and finish without setting up a Google account. Of course, it kind of let me know that there were several features that wouldn't be available for it. Now, there are some limitations that you won't be able to install apps from the Google Play Store and things like that. But in this instance, she did not need those extra features.
Oh, wow. So she's basically just using it as an old-timey phone, the way we used to roll. So that was good for her. Is there anything else on the phone that survived the skipping over Google?
Well, you know, the basic the phone works, the texting works,
good.
All that kind of stuff, and we did connect it to Wi-Fi to facilitate that if she wants something from that. But so far, we haven't got the nag screens about wanting to set up the Google account. So,
okay. Well, great. Good. So with the Wi-Fi, is the browser still there? Can you browse the web even without a...
I hadn't tried that, but I'm presuming that's still available. And,
wow. Okay.
Now, it is most likely possible, and I haven't tried this yet either, to add apps through alternate app stores. You got to be very careful with that, of course, because there's a lot of malicious ones out there that are ones that... Want to do things you don't want to happen. The
right.
One that I trust pretty well is F-Droid. There are others out there. So,
yeah.
But usually you probably have to sideload if you want to try that.
Yes, sideload is a little bit technical thing, but it is possible to get things other than through the easy way to get them through the store. Amazon has a Android store as well, so if you would sideload Amazon, that could be a possibility to get some apps. And if you rather go to Amazon than Google, I don't know if that's a real choice, but that's a possibility as well. Hey, Steve, what about updates? Is she going to be getting security updates without the Google account?
Well, it did update when I started the setup, so I didn't have a Google account prior to that. So I'm hoping that at least it'll get updates. So on that subject, I am going to try that on her old phone because it is one of the ones listed as being supported by one of the third-party firmware. So I'm going to try that on the old one.
All right. Well, Steve, thanks a lot for – I know we had one caller, Jim, called in, and he was very much interested in how to de-Googleize his phone. So I'm sure if he's listening, Jim, here's a tip for you. When you set it up, get out of that Wi-Fi, and then that allows you to continue on with your phone setup without the Google. So, hey, thanks a lot, Steve. Thanks for being one of our long-term listeners and long-term contributors to Battleborne Tech. And you can be like Steve, too, and you call 775-241-3571. That's 775-241-3571. If you get the voicemail, don't be put off. Just go ahead and leave your tech questions. A good time to call you back, and we'll connect up and get you on Battleborne Tech. Hey, Steve, thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. It's always good to hear your words of wisdom over here at Battleborne Tech.
All right, and tech on.
Thanks. Deck on. Thanks.
Well, whether you want to de-Googleize your Android phone for privacy or simplicity, it's good to know that that is still an option. That's something that you can do. Just keep that phone away from the Wi-Fi. we have more and more people interested in privacy and not being sucked into the great tech giants of our time. And that is a good thing to do. One of the things you may not realize is that one of your privacy leaks is your actual web browsing, not just your phone, but going on the web. There's something called fingerprinting. And what fingerprinting is that they're able to find out and record who you are or exactly who your computer is by what your web browser reveals to the world. The web browser has to say something to the website it visits, you know, like what version it is and what's its screen size and resolution and all sorts of different details can be given to websites so that you can have a better visit and experience at the website. But those can be unique and people figured out by putting those all together, you can figure out which browser went where by its fingerprint, by the unique combinations of options and abilities and settings that each of us have in our browsers. Well, of course, our friends over at Electronic Frontier Foundation has figured out that too and figured out how to keep our privacy by something called Cover Your Tracks. And that's the website of the week on Battleborn Tech. It's coveryourtracks.eff.org. Note there are two dots in this URL. Cover Your Tracks, all one word, .eff.org. And if you get right there, there's a little test that you can test your browser to see how much information it's leaking and how well it can be fingerprinted. So what I did, I took a look at my different ones and found out various things. One of the things you may say, well, I got a VPN. I don't have to worry about that, Christy. Well, a VPN, virtual private network, is a tunnel through the network, the internet. It goes from your location to wherever your provider sets up a point to an exit point, an exit node. And from then on, you're just like you're coming from there. You're whatever you tell websites is still being told, even if you got a VPN. It's just being told from a different location. So VPN doesn't help you in this case because it's your web browser that's talking to you, not your internet traffic. Anyhow, what I did, I looked at my various, I have a couple different browsers on my system. I looked at my daily driver is Brave, and I looked at that and I was pleased to see that I was protected both in the normal mode and also in their private mode. Protected, I wasn't leaking a lot of information, only a few bits that's necessary to communicate. And my fingerprint, all the information about them was being randomized helpfully by Brave. Thank you, Brave. So it throws up the settings and changes them a little bit, so I'm not unique. Thanks, Brave. I took a look at Chrome, one of the most popular browser. I have that there. No protection at all, according to EFF, just by plain old normal browsing move. But they have a incognito mode, and I turned that on, and it gave me a partial. EFF said I was partially protected and unique on the internet if I was in incognito mode, not all the way. Firefox, just plain old out-of-the-box settings that I have. EFF says I was partially protected, not really protected on that. And when I went into their private mode, I was protected, and they said it was nearly unique. My fingerprint was nearly unique. So better, but not as good as some other options. And just to be complete, everybody has Edge if you're on the Windows system. The out-of-the-box setting was nothing. But you did get nearly unique, and you were protected from tracking. You were not protected from tracking and from watching your work on your web. But if you did go into what they call in private, you did get protections, and your fingerprint was nearly unique. So that's a roundup. Now, that's just my browsers and versions and my setup. You're going to have to check out your own. If you're using a Mac, check them out yourself on that. Any kind of computer, Linux, Mac, can go to coveryourtracks.eff.org. You can run your own tests, both in private mode or in so-called, I guess, public mode, the normal mode, and see what kind of tracking is available to all the websites that came there. Joe, that's enough for me. Do we have another caller?
Yes, we do. This is Dean, and Dean had a question about Wi-Fi and what kind of coverage and what kind of charges happens with his ISP. So let's see what trouble Dean gets into and what kind of further trouble we get him into by answering.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Christy. This
hey,
is Dean.
What's up? You got a tech question a recipe to share or holiday greetings?
I've got a tech question.
Okay,
you know,
good.
I'm one of those many people that is a pretty heavy home Wi-Fi user, and I'd like to figure out how to cut the cord with my paying the monthly fee for my modem or router with my internet service provider. And, you know, I know there's a lot of different ways to do that, but how do we do that effectively and to get better, you know, Wi-Fi coverage, as it looks like we're going to continue to stay in a hybrid work space for quite a while?
Okay. Well, all right. First of all, don't use Wi-Fi for work. Whenever you can, throw a wire on it, always, especially for Zoom, hates the Wi-Fi. That's hard on the Wi-Fi. It's not made for synchronous video going back and forth. Now, if you can buffer it, like you're watching a YouTube or something, and there's a buffering, that Wi-Fi is more happy. Well, with that said, I think you're really talking about your equipment on that. Most often, the ISP will give you some kind of box to take it. You almost have to take it from whatever wire's coming in, most likely coax, and moving on over to a computer network-based thing, either Wi-Fi or wired, usually wired. Now, you can get boxes and talk them out of giving you a box and renting you a box, and that is possible. It's a little technical. It's easier than it used to be, but you can certainly search for those on your favorite online or big box store. And they will say, I don't recommend them. They'll be under $100. And you're right, you do pay every month for that. And if they allow it, the problem is if you have a problem with your internet service, I like to have their box on-prem, because then I could plug my thing in into their box and I can say, hey, it's your box, get it working. Where I've had experience where before, if it's my box, then they go, well, go get another box and then call us back. I don't want to do that. So I like to have at least the first box in the chain to be theirs. Now, after that, I am not a fan of Wi-Fi, especially that they provide it. And most of the time, the routers they do provide are not the most robust or the highest power. So I like to just get the plain old one computer line coming out of their box. Doesn't do router, it's just a modem, and then plug it into my choice of Wi-Fi. I got a couple Wi-Fi systems at the house, and they're both mesh systems for coverage all through the house, and those are pricey. They're going to be, depending on your square foot of your house and what it's constructed of, you may be looking at several hundred dollars in getting a mesh system, especially if you have multiple floors, if you have any metal in your construction, in the walls. So you'd be looking at a mesh system, and they're out there, and you could tell them, because they have more than one box. If they're selling you more than one box for Wi-Fi, that's a mesh system. That's what you want. Now, you can get a single, Wi-Fi router, to connect up to the box that comes with the, from your ISP or that you bought yourself. You can get one of those. And if you're going to get one of those, it's just like any other kind of radio. Are you able to put it in the center of your house, or where is your connection? Where does it come in?
Well, unfortunately, I set it up with where I've got the TV, which is at one end of the house. And by the time it goes through walls and everything else, it struggles to get to the back end of the house. And then where our two offices are, it also struggles with that. So, yeah, we'd need to figure out how to put it somewhere else to get better coverage overall.
Yeah, that's the logical choice, to put it where all the equipment is. If you get your internet provider is doing your TV as well, of course, you're going to put it by the TV. So what you could do, there's a couple things you can do. One way is to always run a wire. If you got something, you can get to a basement and run it in under the basement. I've done that across the house and then have it pop up on the other side. And then you, what you do, you get a switch and plug in as much as you can to that switch. It's kind of like one of those extension things where you get several plug-ins for one cord. That's what a switch does for you. So that would be really the best. My employer, because I got a home office, my employer gives me a little bit of money for a second internet connection. So what I've done at my house is that I actually had them come up and get another box. So I got one box at the family room and one box in the office. So I don't know if you're in a position to do that, but I think if we're going to do home office forever and ever, I think it's reasonable to say, hey, how about helping us out with some monthly bills? So you could get another box, another connection. That's pricey to do the other end of the house. The third one is the mesh system. You get a good mesh system. Even the 2 or 3 unit ones are really, really helpful than just a single source. Another way, if you can get the, you leave the box where it is by the TV, if you got a wire that you could go even halfway, ideally to the center of the house or the center of where you want to use internet, you can put drive a wire that far to hook up your Wi-Fi router in the center of the house. Remember, Wi-Fi is like a bubble. It goes up, down, either way. It's like a sphere, a bubble. So be thinking about that when you put your Wi-Fi. So if you put your Wi-Fi in your, say, in your first floor in your, or in the basement, you're cutting out half the bubble. So if you can, you want it right in the center of where you want the Wi-Fi to do that. A lot of people are going with, especially with larger houses, or they're looking at a mesh system with either at least 2, maybe 3 or more. And there's various ones out there to get. They're all better than the single source. But I would encourage you to really think hard about how you can get a wire to, especially if you're using Zoom or any video conferencing, GoTo meeting. Cisco has video conferencing. All of those really appreciate a wire because Wi-Fi, you're throwing packets up in the air, and then the unit is grabbing them and trying to assemble them back into a good order. And you don't have to do that with wired. So wired is a lot better than throwing packets around and reassembling them at either end. So a long answer there, Dean. But you got any thoughts? Are you thinking you're going to want to take out that box and put it in your own box? That's a little technical, not as much as it used to be.
Yeah, originally I was going to do that, but after your suggestions, might be better just to go have the ISP provide a new box, and then I do have a kind of a centralized area where I have a bunch of where my internet comes into and then goes out to the house. So I can probably go ahead and try to figure out how to wire it from there so everybody can have a direct wire that needs to be online.
Wow, that would be super.
For video calls.
Yeah, I thought you were going to put the Wi-Fi in the garage. It was going to cost you. Sometimes garages have firewalls, actual physical firewalls, not the network kind, that may cut down your Wi-Fi. So you probably want to try to get it out of your garage, even if your connection's there. You probably want to get it into on the other side of the wall there. But, yeah, planning for wires is absolutely the best idea. On that, there's a lot of good Wi-Fi out there, but they're never going to beat a wire, in my opinion. So,
yeah, okay.
There's also, for some, there are power line wired solutions, which means you you plug the network cable into a box. That box plugs into your electrical outlet, into your electrical system, and it overlays the network signal onto the electrical wiring, and so then you have another box at another plug, an outlet, and you and then that gets it out. So you got your wiring. Now that may or may not work. One thing you need to have it on the what's called the same leg. I mean, if you have different two different legs, most houses do not. A lot of offices do. You're not going to go. It's not going to bridge that gap between different legs of the circuit. The other one is you got to have good, if you got a lot of noise on your electrical line, that could cut down your speed. But that may be better than Wi-Fi, not as good as a dedicated wire. But that's another option to consider, power line adapters for. They've come out of, they're not as popular now that everybody loves the Wi-Fi, but it's really still a good option to consider. And they're not that expensive to try to see if that's going to get what you want on the other side of the house better than Wi-Fi. And it'd be a lot less less expensive than hiring someone doing wiring or getting a mesh Wi-Fi. So you might want to look at the power line network adapters and see if those do the job for you.
Okay.
All right.
Interesting, yeah.
Okay. All right, Dean. Hey, thanks for listening to my long story about Wi-Fi. But, boy, a lot of people are asking about that, not even before we were doing the hybrid work at home a couple days or all days at work.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Dean, and thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Matterborn Tech. Hey, thanks, Dean, and good luck. Hey, call us back if you get a solution that you like, and let us know how it turned out.
Super. I will do that.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Wi-Fi coverage is always an issue, and if you know, I think Joe and I agree that if you can, always do wired, always wired. And I did talk to Dean about power line adapters, and that may be something to try somewhere between the pain of running a wire and the pain of having Wi-Fi issues. That may be something to look at. When you're looking for your Wi-Fi, the easiest thing to do with Wi-Fi reception is to move the Wi-Fi access point and the Wi-Fi unit receptor, laptop, tower, whatever you got, move them closer. That is a non-expensive solution and may work for you. And remember the bubble. Remember the Wi-Fi is in a bubble. So if you can... above or below a Wi-Fi is almost is just as good as going through walls sideways. So keep that in mind as you place your Wi-Fi access point, hopefully somewhere near the center of internet activity.
And we can have something called a Faraday cage unintentionally. Think about when insulation gets put on your house. Sometimes it's foam insulation that has a Mylar cover or a foil cover. And this can effectively block radio signals if it's well grounded through nails or something like that. And you may be in the next room from your router, literally up against the wall, and you're wondering why you're not getting good signal. That could be a reason. But electrical wiring, insulation, a lot of things can interfere with wireless.
I had a client that had a wiring closet in his garage, and so he put his internet Wi-Fi out in his garage. Well, guess what? His garage was pretty well insulated and covered and even fire protected from the rest of the house. And so I brought his Wi-Fi into the laundry room, which is just inside the house. And it was amazing. He was amazing at how well it worked once I got it out of the Faraday cage, which we also park cars in.
We can talk about Faraday cages on our next week's show. And the strange things that people are doing to try to avoid quote unquote 5G and putting their routers inside a cage. And then they wonder why none of their Wi-Fi works at all. That's a Faraday cage. And we'll discuss that in more detail on a later show. But let's just say Faraday cages block radio signals. Wi-Fi is a radio signal. So that's going to wrap us up for this week, Christy. Words of wisdom going out.
This has been Battleborn Tech, the best on-air tech call-in show in Eagle Valley. We soar through the air every Tuesday at 8 p.m. on KNVC FM 95.1 and stream through the net on knvc.org. We are off the air now, but on call at 775-241-3571. So call now or anytime and to set you free from tech troubles.